What's up, everybody? This is Zach. I'm back with another EM Weekly. You guys will be happy to know I'm not by myself blathering on about the problems of today. I brought in a guest, one of my friends, Andrew Donowa. Andrew, how's it going?
It's good, Zach. How are you?
I'm doing well. Andrew has a unique position. Not unique, but relatively unique, especially to the world of emergency managers, where he is an emergency manager within the Pasco County Sheriff's Department. Why don't we start with just sort of an introduction, you know, who you are, how you ended up in Pasco County, what's the weather like, because I'm about to get a huge snowstorm and I'm kind of irritated by it. And then we'll talk about, you know, some of those cool challenges that you have to overcome, the things that you're doing with the agency, and maybe some of your background at other agencies you've worked at.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm in Pasco County, Florida. It's an urban area. Some people call it rural, but we're north of Tampa, about 35, 40 minutes. So we get a lot of people coming out of Tampa living in Pasco County. So my job at the Pasco County Sheriff's Office is the Emergency Management Operations Coordinator. So what's that look like day to day? That could be anything from running emergency calls to going out and supporting the deputies in their day-to-day operations. But the unique part about it is so we have a county emergency management office, and we support them as much as they support us. So it's different for me because I came from local state EM, where you don't always typically see a sheriff's office involved in emergency management functions. You see
or
them,
any cops for that matter.
Yeah, right. Or any law enforcement for that matter. You usually see them on the response side of the house. And then after the response is over, they typically fade away. And then the EM recovery aspect and mitigation side comes in. So it's really interesting. There's a couple of sheriff's offices throughout the state of Florida that also have emergency management divisions. And it's really cool. I'm actually going to a meeting next week with Collier County Sheriff's Office. They have an emergency management division that's fairly new. So we're just going to try to get together and talk about best practices and things like that.
We'll be right back after this quick break for ads.
The L3Harris Extreme 400P radio solves problems and is specifically designed for emergency services. How do we know? We field tested it with medical, urban search and rescue, and collapsed and confined structures. This radio is amazingly tough. Check out the L3Harris Extreme 400P radio at L3Harris.com right now. How do you spell Doberman Emergency Management? EOP, OEP, HVA, HMP, Thyra, TTX, Drone, PDA. Whenever you need an expert, Doberman Emergency Management field experts are there for support. Contact an expert at DobermanEMG.com today.
Nice. And how do you sort of compare, you know, like you said, you've got experience at a few different levels. You've been, I think, like a county, like worked in county emergency management out in the Midwest, right?
Yeah.
You've done, you were a water department emergency manager where you traveled the entire state, you know, is it, so I guess the, what I'm actually trying to ask is, you know, as you're traveling into these different agencies and seeing the sort of needs and the functions within emergency management, you know, should all agencies be looking at emergency, like, does everyone need an emergency manager, right? Or is it like, depending on sort of the whatever the issue is, or the resources available at the, you know, the local community level?
Well, it's a good question to ask, right? So I personally think everybody needs someone dedicated to emergency management. If it's something from just resiliency or the full-scale emergency management as a whole. When I was with the state for water resources, right, there were so many small towns that had no clue how to prepare for their worst day in their, yeah, in their situation, right? And water's a pretty important thing for all of us, right? Because we need to drinking.
Survive a couple days. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, it's unique here at the sheriff's office too, right? So my job day in and day out is I'm planning for pre-planned events, preparing for the worst day for the sheriff's office and how we can get out of that worst day, and making sure the citizens of Pasco County can recover as quickly as possible on our side of the house. But what that also looks like is everything from emergency communications failures to the deputies out in the field, or we have something called DERT, which is Deployable Emergency Response Team. My boss and I oversee that division, And so what that division is that's everything from our command post going out into the field to fun little ATVs, UTVs, things like that. And then we also have a lot of militarized equipment like deuce and a halfs, Humvees, things like that for water rescues and typically used on major rescues during hurricane responses.
Yeah. So I would think that having an emergency manager, so, you know, again, I'm going to trash cops here for a second. Not usually the best when it comes to ICS. I'm not speaking across the board. Of course, there are many agencies that use ICS, but it's a different mindset, right? Like when you come out of the academy, I was a deputy sheriff for like 3.5 years, you know, you're constantly sort of harped on that, like, you are it, right? Like, you're the end all be all. Hopefully backup shows up and help arrives. But especially as you start to get into bigger agencies, bigger calls, having a bunch of disparate cops sort of come together on scene and not have a organizational structure, command and control, coordination in place is challenging. And we see that in a lot of after action reports from major incidents where it doesn't go well, right? And so I would think that having a emergency manager, I think you're taking some of the load off the police officers, right? Because again, this is not a institutionalized thing like it is in the fire and EMS side. So cops are catching up in a lot of ways in this. But by doing this, you're basically creating a environment where now it's going to become like much more inherent. You're going to be, you know, probably, like you said, you're doing more interoperability stuff with other sheriff's departments and stuff. So that's building, you know, breaking down some of those old barriers and stuff. So have you seen, are you the first emergency manager for Pasco County or was there someone there before?
No. So I have a direct supervisor. His name's Aaron Bryant. He's a director over our emergency management division. And so I think the sheriff's office.
Is he a deputy?
He's a civilian.
Okay. Yeah.
He's a civilian. So it's him and I that lead the emergency management division here. And so before him, there was another female in the position. So they've had the position. I mean, the office itself is about seven.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. For about 7 years.
Maybe from your previous experience then, you know, like how are the advantages that you've seen in introducing emergency management specifically into law enforcement? Like how does that sort of benefit the field as a whole, as well as potentially, like, again, talking about those interoperability issues where we all show up at the big one and the fire and police maybe aren't used to working with police in that capacity?
Well, you know, I think one of the big benefits is the best example I like to give people is I try to go out on every SWAT mission that there is,
yeah,
day or night, for that interoperability. Because sometimes our SWAT commanders just might not think, oh, we do need to bring in fire rescue on this scene for X, right?
Or mass care stuff, all that stuff.
Exactly, exactly. So we just started implementing a SWAT medic program here at the sheriff's office. So including in all that, we have technical rescue, all these things that could happen on a SWAT call. So it's my job to make sure that our SWAT commanders are apprised of their resources other than what just the law enforcement side can handle. So typically when we do have a major SWAT incident, we do bring in fire rescue and I try to be that go-between them. And sometimes it's just a straight shot. Like we're getting better at it as we're doing it. Right. So like sometimes they don't even have to call me. They call directly to the SWAT commander or the SWAT commander calls directly to them. And then on pre-planned events. Right. So it used to be that we all had different command posts set up. Now we're using unified command and it's running smooth.
Nice.
Things like that, so that everybody's on the same page at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge, it's just another reason to sort of, you know, foot stomp. The emergency managers, where you have a very specific job, and to an outsider, they look at that, and it looks like we do everything, and therefore we do nothing, and so it can be really confusing. But at a major incident, so very similar, the last, you know, emergency management position when I was running the university emergency management program, you know, the cops sort of did their own thing for a long time. And not that it was wrong, right? Like it wasn't a normal part of their structure to set up incident command and to establish, you know, who's going to sort of make what decisions, maybe structure a larger incident more formally. And the first few times I showed up, they're like, we don't need you or want you here necessarily. And after a while, they realize like, oh, hey, the emergency manager can make the calls, you know, to get us stuff that we don't have access to, right? Takes the load off the dispatcher. You know, I can make the calls to the Red Cross to make sure that there's, you know, snacks coming if needed, to make sure that if we need sheltering or a workspace that isn't available, you know, all of this other stuff that they had to do with the dispatcher, right? While the emergency is unfolding. So instead of them making the decisions that could potentially, you know, impact the lives of their officers, or in your case, the deputies, and the decisions that are affecting, you know, the well-being of everyone else that's impacted by this event, you know, they're doing this through dispatch. Dispatch is already overwhelmed because they're getting all their 911 calls. Plus, the world doesn't stop for every, you know, emergency. There's other emergencies happening. So having someone like you in an agency is a force multiplier. And, you know, the fact that you're going out and doing these calls, the other thing, so I do want to, I've said it over and over and over. Emergency managers, get out from behind the desk. Get out of your EOC. Go out into the field. You know, I don't expect you to be a first responder and do all sorts of stuff. You got to take that?
We're good.
Okay, cool. I know you're working, so I don't want to like interrupt your actual job. But, you know, don't hide behind the locked doors. Like, get out there and do stuff out in the field, because it helps you in your process. Like, oh, I need to understand, like, what does a sheriff's department do at a major incident? How am I supposed to support them if I'm in an EOC, if I don't really know what the job is? So I work with Portland Bureau of Emergency Management on one of our contracts, and I know their folks go out and do ride-alongs with the Portland Police Department, the fire department, to get oriented, and they do field stuff. You were actually just up in New York City and got to check out how they're doing incident management, you know, teams. They have their internal stuff that they do as well as, you know, deployable teams. So maybe talk a little bit about that. Because again, I want emergency managers out there. I want us to all have cars, you know, with signs on them that say emergency management, like fire trucks and cop cars and everything, because it's advertising. But you got to get out there. So the incident management stuff is something you're starting that's relatively new. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, you know, incident management is a really big thing in my heart. It weighs heavy on my heart because major incidents happen so quick. And sometimes we have so much stuff going on that we don't know how to control that incident.
Yeah.
And I can't take all the credit, right? So, you know, the team here before I got here was slowly trying to figure out what they were going to do. And just me sliding in, trying to assist and build that out better. So we ended up taking a trip up to New York City, and met with FDNY's incident management team, and just got to meet with their training and exercise coordinator, and their major events coordinator. And they were just showing us their ground up work of how they did it and how they got to be where they are. Because most people know the story, FDNY's team started because of 9/11. Yeah. After 9/11, they realized, oh crap, we don't know how to manage incidents and we're New York City. So we went up there to figure out how we can do that in best practices, right? Because I deployed to Minneapolis for the George Floyd civil unrest events up there, and they did not have good cohesive planning processes and incident management teams that could help fulfill the mission that was going on to stop the mass chaos. You know, our sheriff down here is very adamant about getting the right resources at the right places at the right time. So we're building out this incident management team right now. Went to New York, talked to them about how they do their best practices. And then after we left New York, we went to New Jersey for the All Hazards Incident Management Symposium. Got a chance to talk to New Jersey State Police, their incident management team, and some of their leadership about their best practices and the way that they tailor their team to make sure that when they do deploy, that they're deploying the right amount of people at the right times and things like that. Because a lot of people think, oh, I have an incident management team because I took the basic incident management course and I can deploy out to the field. But you and I both know that's not the case. I'm 100%. Oh, yeah. It's a whole lot of work. And I'm 100% an advocate for emergency managers being out in the field so they know what to expect and they know what to see, what these people are requesting for back at the EOC.
Yeah, it's good resource management when you're out there by yourself and you may not have everything that you need and you're working with what you have. I mean, that's the worst case scenario, building those incident management teams where you've got some backup immediately. It sort of builds inherent interoperability because, you know, typically an incident management team is multi-agency, usually multi-jurisdictional. And you might bring in folks, you know, so again, my sort of, I'll get on the soapbox here. You know, an incident management team should sort of consist of anyone you might need. Like, think of the folks that maybe are missing out, right? Like, so obviously law enforcement, fire, EMS, Your local emergency management makes perfect sense. You've got your tactical and strategic decision makers there. You've got your resource management. But don't be afraid to bring in those partners that maybe are a little less thought of, right? Mental health services, social services, some nonprofit folks, you know, so that you can have that all-in-one team. Because the goal is, you know, especially if it hits the fan, you want 72 hours of basically everything you're going to need for your tactical planning, strategic decision making, and to survive for that period of time until hopefully more resources come out. And the more incident management teams we have, the better, right? Because the other thing is backing up those teams. Like FDNY and New Jersey, I know, work a lot together because there's so much population there. And often there's just not, I mean, almost unimaginable, right? Like you were up there. Their resources are unbelievable. They have 30, I think it's like 35,000 police officers or something like that, 30,000 firefighters and EMS. I mean, you just can't even imagine. But when Hurricane Sandy hit, every borough is underwater, losing power, all those normal emergencies are happening, and you're trying to set up an area command, and you've got a team of one, you know, and everybody else is spread out, that gets really hard. So same with Florida, obviously, like Hurricane Ian, you know, obviously blasted through there, impacted a bunch of different jurisdictions, a bunch of different people. So those incident management teams are going to be critical. How are you guys sort of looking to set yours up? You know, or what lessons did you learn while you were up there that, you know, as you're thinking about setting it up?
So, you know, I'm glad you brought up Hurricane Ian. That was before I started here at Pasco County, but that was one of the big breaking points for our agency to say, hey, we need to get better at deploying. So if you know anything about Florida, typically you will see mass sheriff's office agencies deploying down to major incidents, where in like North Carolina, for example, it's mass fire department agencies that are deploying all those resources like USAR teams and equipment and things like that. Well, here it's a lot of the sheriff's offices do that same tactic, right? So like here, like I said, DERT, our deployable emergency response team, they send our command post. All of that stuff goes down with them, but we're also deploying anywhere from 20 to 60 deputies down to that affected area. And when they first get there, their mission might not be law enforcement centric. It might be helping with search and rescue to make sure that we can get things stable. And then they transition into that law enforcement centric role. So the way that we're trying to tailor our IMT is to support our deputies when they go out into the field. Because it's not just typically our deputies that go. It might be 60 from us and then 60 from another county. Right. And so that if we can get together and tailor that down and make sure that we're doing all the same things at the right time, I think is going to be the best way for us to do it. So our IMT is going to be law enforcement centric, but our sheriff here is very, very knowledgeable when it comes to thinking ahead. So we have just about SMEs in every field when it comes to what an IMT team would lay out on, right? Just because they do other jobs within the agency. So we have tactical medics, like I said earlier. We started a TAC med program, but those tactical medics have been embedded. They're sworn deputies. They're already here. We have mental health counselors on the other side of the house that are already here that we can pull on. We have some people that are or were firefighters that we can pull on, but we'll also pull on those partners from Pasco County Fire and Rescue too to come in to respond to emergencies with us with that IMT team.
That's awesome.
And then the best part is, right, so we have a really good working relationship with our county emergency management office. And our county director, he actually is the regional IMT incident commander. So we are embedding people onto the regional team as well so that we can learn best practices from them. They can learn best practices from us. And at the end of the day, we're doing the mission that's supposed to be done.
Yeah, that's awesome. I imagine, you know, one thing that I'm trying to like steer my podcast towards is also technology. I love technology. I know Pasco County is a big L3Harris, you know, agency. What kind? Obviously, I'm just giving a shout out because they're our sponsors. And I love L3Harris. But what kind of technology are you rolling out with? Because that's the other like big factor that I think a lot of people, there's a big transition right now in public safety and emergency management where we're doing a lot more with a lot less resources. Even a well-resourced department probably is not staffed to where they want to be. So you have to augment and you've got to figure out how do we make that work. So technology is usually that solution, right? Smart good investments in technology. So what kind of stuff do you roll out with? Like you said, you have a mobile command post, and I'm sure you have a huge communication system. What kind of stuff are you getting to play with?
Yeah. So, you know, that's one thing that we're looking at right now. So the sheriff's office is actively deploying new radios. I think it's the 185s for L3Harris. We're actively giving those to deputies. And the cool part about those radios is, you know, if it goes down, like our radio towers go down, it's backhauled through LTE. And so we use FirstNet here. So
yeah, mission critical push to talk.
Exactly. Mission critical push to talk is exactly what we have on these radios. We also have something called Beyond, which is an L3S product too. It's on our phones, certain people's phones that are out in the field that, like, for example, if there's something going on that I needed to know about and I was in New York City last week, I can just turn on my phone and hear everything that's going on. So we got that. We're also looking at getting some other products from L3Harris to help just strengthen us when we deploy. We're actually getting 2 Nomad trucks in right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So not the big ones like Verizon has. They're a little bit smaller.
I mean, they're all sick. My favorite thing about I love going to IEM and seeing the Nomad. Like when they have their booth set up, I'm just like drooling over it.
You know,
they won't let me touch them or drive it, but I want to.
Well, you have to come down to Florida because we're getting 2 of them. It's going to be Fieldcom 1 and Fieldcom 2. And that's just going to be nothing but communications equipment for when we're out in the field and we have nothing to rely on.
So with that would be something you'd like probably deploy with the IMT and the command post and everything?
Yep. That's the plan. Nice. Yeah. And the plan with those is, so we want to be able to do anything without any type of communications at all. And so L3Harris has been a huge help with tailoring that down for us of what we need and what we don't need. But also at the same time, like I said, we have FirstNet here. And so we have a lot of FirstNet equipment that we're ordering as well. We're going to have some CRDs coming in here in the next few weeks, things like that can backfill into the L3Harris stuff. So, and that's why we got the CRDs is because my worry was,
those are like the little Rescue 42, the Pod Runner type things, right?
Yep.
Yeah. With the, Vermont just got, I think, 2 of those and, they're also like, I think they're Starlink backhauled with the FirstNet, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So the ones we're getting the CRD minis, which those are, that's 2 Pelican cases and the backhaul for that one is, the Starlink. And then there's the big CRDs, which is backhauled by Viasat satellite. Yep. And the new ones are actually coming out and they'll have Starlink in them as well. But right now, for now, we're just getting the mini ones. And then once we get some more money in the budget, you know, we're going to try to go ahead and get a couple of the big ones so that we can put them in each district office. So if the comms go down.
So just think about that. I mean, you've been in long enough. I've definitely been in long enough. I remember when Irene hit our state, I was working, actually with Sandy, when we were kind of preparing for that. Communications is a huge issue. Our state still has we have no statewide interoperability. It's still, you know, hopefully your radio is programmed with the interoperability channels, but we don't have a statewide radio net or anything. So we called in FEMA to come in and, you know, the system that we got was the MIRV, which is like still common. They have those, they use them all the time, but like that was the only option, you know? And I remember the Red Cross had their communication system. Shout out to Rakesh who got me like all, I remember seeing all his pictures about this stuff when he was working on the team, but that was like the smallest one. And that was still a huge SUV, the giant dome. And it still was a ton of work to do interoperability. Now we're talking about 2 Pelican cases and you've got a fully functional, you know, SATCOM with, I think, broadband speeds, even during a disaster. Cause I think depending on how you are licensed with them, right. You have like a municipal or a government contract, you get preemption and stuff over like, you know, regular TV or internet. And you can run everything out of there. You can set up phones. There's enough bandwidth. And if you have a switch with you, you could set up an entire office worth of phones, your normal laptop stuff. And then like out in the field, you know, your radar, your, you know, the stuff that like you just forget how nice it is to have and not have to try to communicate over, you know, traditional radios that, hey, this bad weather's coming. You can just pull it up on your system. So that's like incredible. And like you said, if you're spreading this out across the county, it adds so much redundancy and, you know, continuity of government, continuity of operations, and all those resources, like you said, are benefiting the other agencies within the county And then when it really hits the fan, I'm sure within the rest of the state.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, the big thing, I think, when it comes to that CRD, you know, I've deployed all over the country for some of the world's worst emergencies. And it would have been awesome to have those mini CRDs right there that you can just pop up. I mean, even last week in New York City, you know, New York City's huge. We didn't have that best of service in certain spots.
Yeah.
And it's like you can pop that thing on and turn it and pop it up immediately. And then all of a sudden you got cell phone service. And it's just really cool because, you know, if you have AT&T or FirstNet or T-Mobile, whoever it is, you always see up there in the top left corner, T-Mobile or AT&T.
Yeah, yeah.
When those CRDs turn on, it says CRD. So you know that you're on the backhaul.
Yeah.
And I also think the other cool part is that, like you said about broadband, so we get I can't remember the special code that it is for first responders, but we also get the Wi-Fi capability too. So anybody that has a FirstNet phone can be able to use that CRD for the FirstNet telephone stuff, but the Wi-Fi stuff we can lock down and have, and only people that can get it is that has the password. So that if we need people, like they want to phone home, you know, or whatever it may be, because we're down range and they haven't seen their kids in a week, we can log them into something so that they can do those things. And I think that's why I like the versatility of it, is we're not giving away all of our tricks in the bag. If there's 100 people down there deployed and there's only 50 of them are ours, but most of the tricks in the bag we can give them, because I'm a big advocate of interoperability. It's no point us going somewhere and then we can't talk and nobody else can talk, or the people next door to us can talk, but we can't talk and we don't know why. So,
yeah. And a lot of times, you know, I mean, like when you look at the, any after action report, like, right, communications is almost the number one bullet. You know, I mean, we joke about it, but like a lot of it has to do with the fact that like, it was so complex in the past to make interoperability work, right? Like the radios, I mean, I so many times in my career, I've carried like three or four radios and now I've got, you know, four bands, LTE. The LTE thing, the mission critical push to talk, and the Beyond or any of those similar apps. I know there's other companies out there that do similar things. Having the ability, you know, to get people on the network that maybe aren't normally on your net, right? So again, like, does everyone need a radio in the county? Probably not. But like, if there's a huge disaster and you need social services, you know, that maybe runs your shelters, and the health department who's, you know, doing testing of the waters and maybe checking mold and stuff. If you want everyone to be working on it from the same page, same sheet of music, you need to have them on your net so you can build those dynamic talk groups right off the bat. And even like now with radio communications, you know, dispatch can do a lot of that stuff anyways, you know, start to patch you around, especially if you have a good network. So it's just so much easier and so much more flexible. The challenge I would say, and I'll kind of leave this to you to answer as well, is, you know, is everyone ready for this? So one of the things that I have seen is departments investing in technology, and then you spend all the money, you buy all the toys, and they're like, I don't know how to run this. So like, how are you training your folks up to sort of get them ready for this? Or is Pasco County already so like sort of invested in technology that this is like, we're just moving to the next generation? We're already like pretty well set up and comfortable with this stuff.
So, you know, that's a good question, right? So I think it's all a learning stage for everybody when all this new equipment comes in, because I personally, I'm not a COM-L, right? I've never deployed as a COM-L. And then some of the stuff just got put on my lap and I was like, okay, you know, I'll figure it out. We'll figure out what's going on.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, hey, I can figure it out. And if I don't know how to figure it out, I'm going to call somebody that does know.
I got my numbers. Yeah, I can call.
Exactly. So, you know, that's what we're doing right now, is we're waiting on this stuff to come in, anticipating on it coming in. And then when the CRDs come in, of course, you know, there's an emergency management office down the way that has 7 CRDs.
Wow.
So if I have to call on them, you know, to figure out some things, but they're just they're first responder proof nowadays, right? So, I mean, pretty much those mini CRDs, you turn them on, you don't even have to worry about facing it to a satellite or anything. It's going to find it on its own and you're good. And then on the other hand, those Nomads, when they come in, I think we get like three weeks of training on those things and 24-hour hotlines, things like that. And then again, right, like I have a lot of good friends back in Charlotte, North Carolina, that are on the commail side of the house that that's all they do, eat, sleep, and breathe that stuff all day long. And I can call them and they'd be more than happy to come down or get on some phone calls so we can talk through that stuff. And then our IT department as well, right? So, you know.
Oh, IT. Wow. You guys are actually thinking IT. I hope everyone just heard that that's listening, because that is a critical component now. Because all that stuff you're talking about, especially if it's touching the internet, you got to have those folks involved.
Yeah. So, you know, they started buying this stuff before I got here, not the CRD stuff, but the nomads before I got here. And they had to have IT brought in because here in Florida, you either have a radio shop or you have your IT department that handles your radios.
Yeah.
Well, we have both. So at the sheriff's office, we have our IT department that has a radio person in it. And then we also have the county radio shop, where if it's way too out of scope of our IT folks, they'll send it over to the county radio shop. So they were brought in on those nomad discussions of what we're going to do and how we're going to make those things work. And then, like you said, the internet side of the house, right? If it's coming back and touching servers or anything like that, we got to figure out a way to make sure that IT is talking to their IT. So it's been a lot of conversations to make sure that we're doing this right, because we don't want these pieces of equipment to show up. And then as soon as they show up in May, we have a hurricane hit July 1 and we still don't know what's going on with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's just the reality of, like, I mean, everything you just talked about though, is like how it's supposed to be done, right? The first is the emergency managers. It always tends to fall in our lap, right? We're problem solvers. We want to do lots of stuff. But emergency managers that are not spun up on IT and comm, like, unfortunately, again, resources aren't going to arrive. You're not going to get probably the comm that you hope to have. You're probably not going to get a full-time IT person, you know, for your, you know, medium-sized emergency management agency. Even large agencies sometimes don't have that capacity. So, you know, trying to at least get spun up enough so you ask the right questions, especially when you're doing your, you know, the building and the specking out of equipment, you know, bring those folks in and say, hey, how does this work in our network? You know, is this going to connect to, you know, so again, you're building two mobile communication systems, you know, will this work with our dispatch software, right? Will it work with the hardware that we have? Are we going to need different radios, different antennas? How does this all function together? And if you get everyone on the same page and invite everyone into the room during the process, money, you'll be golden.
Yep.
But if you buy it in a silo and then you show up with it and it doesn't work and you didn't think about, well, what about this issue? Or you get a virus somehow and spread it through the entirety of your network because there's no cyber protection in it. You know, you've A, destroyed your reputation, probably the trust in your abilities, et cetera. And even though you were trying to solve a problem, you know, you only made it worse. So, I think that is, I can't foot stomp that enough. And it's awesome that you guys are thinking about it. You know, what's next? What's like the, you know, do you have like big long range plans that you guys are starting to think about, or what are the things that you're excited about, you know, in the coming year or so?
You know, the incident management team is probably my most exciting piece right now, because I love deploying to go help other people. And our sheriff is a very big advocate as that as well, is because if we send people one day when we need help, they're going to come to us.
100%,
it's just cool right now to see how our sworn guys and our civilian guys are learning the process of what an incident management team looks like. We have the major incident management team class coming in June. So that'll be a really good class that we're putting on. We got 26 people that's in it right now. 10 of them aren't even from our agency. They're other law enforcement agencies that are coming.
Still seats open?
Yeah, still seats open. Come on down.
All right. I might come down. I need to do my class. I haven't done is that the sort of overview, the IMT like 101?
Yep. Basically. Yep. 0305 incident management overview. And it's a great course. We got some really good instructors that are coming from across the country to teach. So we got a guy from New York City. We got two people from North Carolina. I think a guy from California that are coming to teach this course. And the reason we pulled from outside is because we wanted to have a full perspective of what was going to happen in this course. So the people that have never seen this or, can see, oh, this is what it's like. Because you and I both know like, ICS 300 is a very long class and it's very trying on your soul. And so I'm trying to encourage everybody, hey, not all incident management courses are like this. It's more,
get through the basics. It's boring, but you'll get the fundamentals. Yeah, it doesn't really get fun until you actually start to do position specific training and then doing the there's a point I actually wanted to ask about. So, all right. So you have your incident management stuff. What do you do for training and exercising? Like, so as you're adding these new components and stuff, you know, one of the things that's really important is to look, you know, long range and say, okay, we have the Nomads. So now we need to build that into our training and exercise cycle. So how much, you know, sort of say do you have in that? Are you the one who's sort of organizing that? And what does that look like? Do you guys do annual exercise? Do you do like frequent tabletops? How's it look for you guys?
So on the dirt side of the house, they have optional monthly training that the dirt team members can go to.
Yeah.
And then they have quarterly mandatory training that they have to go to.
Yeah.
And then developing this new incident management team, when we first start out, right, because there's going to be so many new people on there, we're probably going to have training once a month because we're looking to get like 20 to 25 people on there to start out. So have it once a month. And then once we get better at it, then we'll slide go out. It might go once a quarter. That's mandatory, and once a month is optional.
Yeah.
But the plan is once we get everything figured out and the team's established, we're going to be doing tabletops. We're going to be doing functional exercises. We're going to be activating for those pre-planned events, things like that.
Yeah. Oh, there's another money shot, like right there. Activate, you know, do the county fairs, the air shows, you know, concerts, you know, practice what you preach, right? Like, you know, exercises are great, but like everyone, people cheat, right? They look at you know, the plans or the handbook, and they're like, all right, I kind of know where this is going. And by the end, you win. Like, that's the problem. Like, you're always winning, and that's not how real life works. So, you know, again, get out from behind the desk, go do the, those planned events and run, you know, run through your plans and see how it holds up in a real world event that is fairly low risk, you know, pretty controlled. But at least it gets the wheels moving. You have to actually deploy your stuff set up there. So that's awesome. Yeah.
Well, and we already, you know, deploy teams out for pre-planned events. Sure. We just have it. It's command staff though, right? It's the people that are running the events. So once we, get more into that IMT side of it is when it'll start to run a whole lot smoother. We just had a huge, parade and festival that we did, 2 weeks ago now. And we ran the IMT model. Right.
Nice.
We used an IAP, our IAP. We did all the things right. We got task books open for certain people. So task books got signed off on things like that. So people can start getting that mindset. Because my goal at the end of the day is of course to be 100% prepared for Pasco County if something happens. But if there's a county like Vermont, for example, or the state of Vermont calling saying, hey,
we're basically a county compared to there's 650,000 of us, I think, in the state. So we're about to get absolutely inundated with the eclipse. We're anticipating potentially 200,000 people. Our state does not have an incident management team. You know, we're trying to get something spun up. I've got some friends that, you know, we're working behind the scenes to try to at least get the groundwork laid, because the same thing, like there's these incidents and events where you just don't have, like we go right to the state EOC, which is crazy. And then it's all local rules. So you got 256 communities, you know, all kind of doing their own thing. And it just gets completely unwieldy. So that incident management model for everything, right? Like it's just how do we contain? How do we do interoperability? How does everyone work together? It works in so many different capacities. And if you're following, like you're saying, you're following, you know, you're taking the national trainings. You know, I'm assuming you guys are probably going to work towards like type 3 to begin with and work your way up from there. So you can be EMAC'd, you know, now you're a resource to everyone. It makes it so much smoother. And then when it does hit, you know, you're supporting it. We don't have that capacity, right? Like that's one of the things that's kind of sucks up here, but knowing that I can say, hey, we need to EMAC a, you know, type 3 team, you know, Pasco County is available. That's huge. And we need to do more and more of that. I think when there was a study done with like New Madrid, if that fault were to, you know, fully kick off, that you need something like 140 type 1 USAR teams.
Oh, wow.
And I think we've got 14 or something. I'm sure I'm getting these numbers wrong. There's nowhere near the capacity.
Yeah.
And just thinking about, you know, I mean, even running, you know, area command, what's the number one rule about running area command? Don't run area command. It sucks every single time. So having those incident management teams where you can sort of isolate, compartmentalize, but like have that interoperability is huge. So that's cool. And thinking about, you know, as you're you're doing stuff. You're already, before the team's even formed, you're already starting to go through the motions. You're doing your training and exercising. You're going to have a whole bunch of lessons learned and after actions before you even like day one Pasco County IMT, right? Yeah. So that's awesome.
Well, my best suggestion for you, I think maybe, is go ahead and put that EMAC request in and I'll come up there. We got some people that are already credentialed. We'll come up there and help you out and get it built out.
That'd be great. I'd love to show you around Vermont. We'll do it in the fall. You know, we'll try to find some sort of disaster up here when it's really nice out. We'll come hang out and then, we'll recognize the value of an IMT. We'll form one up here and then I'll come down and support you guys the next time. So
there you go.
You know, yeah. So lessons learned out of this again, I want to foot stomp like network. Andrew repeatedly said, I'll call someone, right? I mean, as emergency managers, we have two things we do really well. One is say yes to everything, which is probably a fault of ours. And then the other is to network like crazy. And you just never know. I was, texting Martin Killian, who was at, DIPOP that I think you were at, and they're having severe storms down there. I checked in on him just to see how he was doing. You know, he's running a school district and he's running their emergency management. They're about to get hit with a bunch of severe weather. So just like reaching out to people. When I was actually in Washington, D.C., I think it was last week, maybe 2 weeks ago. And we were at the Mission Critical Alliance and one of my buddies texted and was like, hey, I just changed agencies. I'm trying to get everyone switched to FirstNet and I'm trying to figure out something with the phone. Can I have two SIM cards? And da da da. And I was like, I'm sitting with the FirstNet guy, like the one that is like in charge of all this. And I was like, hey, can I ask a question? He was like, sure. I got the answers, right? I have these connections and you know, it's so nice to be able to depend on that. You can formalize it with an IMT, you can formalize it with an emergency management agency. But I just want to reiterate, like over the entire conversation that we've had repeatedly, you've said, I'll call someone, right? Or I know someone. So super important. Andrew, awesome. Thank you so much for joining me. I think there was a lot of good lessons here. And I'm super excited to see all the cool stuff you're doing. And then I want to go down and drive your Nomads around and play with all your technology because I don't have that. So
yeah, I appreciate it. My biggest thing is like getting out of the seat and going out into the field so I know what's going on and I can help and support as much as I can. So I appreciate you letting me come on today.
Of course. How do people check out, do you have like your own website within the Pasco County Sheriff's, or how can people connect with you if they want to like sort of learn more from you?
So I'm on LinkedIn, Andrew Donowa. I'm wearing like a blue suit or something on my LinkedIn page.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's very fancy. I do remember. Looking quite dapper.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest way to connect with me. And if you can't for some reason get me, reach out to you and you can shoot them my email or text message or something.
All right. I will. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Andrew, and have a good rest of your day.
Yes, sir. Thanks. Talk soon.